All right. Who wants some? Who's next? Huh? How about it? Who wants some? Huh? Who wants to have a little? Why, oh, why didn't I take the blue pill?
HTF Radio presents the DVD Marquee with your hosts, Jeffrey Rosato and Shane McDonald. Brought to you by iCraveDVD.com and TheHomeTheaterForum.com.
Hey, Shane, we've got one heck of a show today. We've lined up some really good titles for episode numero six.
We sure do, Jeffrey, and three of the movies we're going to talk about are connected in a way, and we'll tell you how they're connected as we go along.
Yes, we will. All of these discs are so jam-packed with goodies, we had to delay a show a bit, but we're back. And I promise you, all you Marquee faithful, your patience is going to be rewarded.
Especially when we take them to a dream world of magic with the Chronicles of Narnia.
Or to Skull Island with Peter Jackson's King Kong.
Or back to the Planet of the Apes with the Legacy Collection.
Rob Marshall's follow-up to Chicago, Memoirs of a Geisha.
And our early peek at Eli Roth's hostel.
Stay with us!
You have a traitor in your midst, Aslan.
His offense was not against you.
Have you forgotten the laws upon which Narnia was built?
Do not cite the deep magic to me, witch. I was there when it was written.
There is a prophecy that two sons of Adam and two daughters of Eve will appear to defeat the White Witch and put an end to this 100-year winter.
Jeffrey, I'm super excited about the first title we're going to look at this week, and it's C.S. Lewis's Christian allegorical fantasy books, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, The Witch, and The Wardrobe. Now, thankfully for Christmas, I was able to get all the books. I hadn't read them before I saw the movies, which I did preview twice in theaters before getting my hands on the DVD. And I must say, I loved this movie.
I did too, Shane. I was kind of expecting something along the lines of Harry Potter, you know, something that just really wouldn't interest me. But I think it's the best family film I've seen in a long time. I was completely knocked out by the whole thing, from the cast, from the special effects, the story itself. I mean, it's a marvelous movie, and it's a terrific DVD.
It sure is, and I sure did enjoy the performances from the kids. First movie, they were able to come off as more real, unlike Daniel Radcliffe in the first Harry Potter, a little wooden, a little sluggish,
stiffen.
You know, the nervousness of the first movie, where these kids played through that fairly well.
They had great chemistry. I mean, they had a great rapport going, and I liked the fact that this was a family that was kind of not exactly close, but once they entered this magical land and all the challenges they had to get through, they grew together as a family, which I feel is an important element of this movie, which makes it so good.
For sure, and they had a terrific supporting cast. You've got Tilda Swinton, who plays the White Witch, and she portrays evil witch so well. She doesn't fall into that typical trap of female evil lead.
Yeah, it's nothing at all like Margaret Hamilton's Wicked Witch of the West and The Wizard of Oz. And one thing I think they mentioned in one of the commentary tracks is that they wanted to avoid such cliches. And Swinton just does a marvelous job. She's, you know, she's beautiful once we first see her, but there's this undercurrent of evil that you just sense, you know, like a minute into her character's introduction. And she does just a great job the whole way through. And I love the way that, you know, as the seasons change and that ice on top of her head, her, you know, crown of sorts gets smaller and smaller. I mean, it was done very effectively, not just from her costuming to her performance all the way down. It was just brilliantly done.
Sure was. And another thing, the special effects in this movie, nothing short of amazing. They've taken it up another level, especially with the animals, the beavers, fan favorites, my favorites, and then you've got Aslan, the lion, and when you see him talking, you think That's how a lion would talk, and he's voiced by none other than the great Liam Neeson.
Yeah, we've come such a long way in less than, I would say, 5 years since Phantom Menace, when some of this stuff looked kind of fake and, you know, artificial. I mean, it's been like a quantum leap in technology, and this is about the best use of green screen, and I'm looking for the word that starts with an A, animatronic, I think.
Animatronic, yes.
Yeah, the just brilliant. I mean, and you see these in these making of documentaries that we're going to get to here shortly, but just it was just phenomenal. It was like you were looking at real beavers and a real lion, and the wolves, well, you know, some of the wolves were real, but they had to add in some CGI, you know, for their eyes and stuff like that. And just, it was just magically done the whole way through. I mean, just everything looked, like you said, real.
And we've got to give props to Weta, who did most of the design work from the costumes to the weapons and everything like that. And they had to bring in another party. They brought in Howard Berger of the K&B Effects Group, and they put this together fantastic. They designed the fur for the creatures. They designed puppets. They designed the animatronic minotaurs. He did it all, and he brought so much enthusiasm to it. And we'll talk about that a little more when we get into the extras, but they really put a lot of effort into making this look real.
Yeah.
And thankfully, this DVD does a perfect job when it comes to the technical aspects of the DVD itself, and I'm talking about the video and the audio. Nearly perfect video. The audio, I'd actually say it's reference quality, especially the DTS track.
There was a moment, I think about 45 minutes into the film, where I thought I heard somebody knocking in my bedroom, and I thought, oh God, somebody's broken in, and I just went back to the bedroom. There was nobody there, you know, and I come back, you know, hit repeat, and then, you know, listened, and it was like, my God, how close to real can you get? You know, I mean, it's just fabulous. It's a terrific mix. I think the DTS was just a little too sharp for my taste. I was more inclined toward the basic 5.1, but both of them are good. They're both very good.
Now, for extra material, Disney has put together a fantastic collection. And I think part of the reason that it works out so well was they had access. They had a DVD production crew on set the entire time this movie was being made, from everything from the menus, which they filmed while they were in the chopper with the crew taking scenes, all the featurettes and everything were filmed as it was being done. And when you start going through these extras, it's the right amount of length, and everything just feels so perfect. I enjoyed the extras so much on this DVD.
Yeah, my favorite was Chronicles of a Director, featuring Andrew Adamson, who was just hot off Shrek. And what was so special about his involvement in the film is that, you know, he loved the book as a child, and he wrote like a 20-page treatment of what he felt the film should be like.
Before he even read the book.
Just, it covers, exactly. It was just so well done, and just, it's an ideal combination of director and project. They couldn't have found anybody more perfect to helm this film.
And you can really tell the passion that he had for it when you listen to the two commentaries. We've got a commentary with the children actor, Georgie Henley, Skander Keynes, William Mosley, Anna Popplewell, and everything. Like, it's not your typical commentary because the kids are involved, but they do give a lot of insight into some of the tricks and the filming stuff that were used during the movie, and it was really enjoyable to listen to.
You know, they're just a great bunch of kids, and the thing I liked the most about it, Shane, is that they don't appear to be a bunch of brats. I mean, you know, I've heard some commentary tracks with kids where you almost needed a teacher to come in and say, quiet class, you know, quiet class, but just, to, you know, these kids were just like, you know, wonderful. They seemed to have a passion for what they did. It was a learning experience, and I highly recommend it for everybody, even those who don't sample commentary trots. It's
quite and a good one. Other commentary track with the production designer Roger Ford and producer Mark Johnson is just as good, a little more technical, but just as good. Yeah. For enjoyability for me.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I was so impressed by this movie, Shane, on a technical level, I almost didn't want to know what was behind the curtain, you know. I didn't want to know how they made that spectacular jump when the ice was breaking and scenes like that. But looking at it, you know, especially that particular scene, which is featured in a featurette of its own called Anatomy of a Scene, I think
it
is.
Yeah, the Melting River.
And they shot that in about 4 different locations.
They sure did. They were in New Zealand. They were in L.A. They got some stuff from the Netherlands, and I believe Czechoslovakia is the other location. That's a lot of work for one scene that's really probably only about 45 seconds of the film.
It makes you appreciate the craft a lot more,
doesn't
it? It
sure does. Other things that are on the first disc, we've got a blooper reel. It's just your typical blooper reel. But the Narnia Fun Facts, you could basically say, is a text commentary. They pop up a lot of information about Narnia, about C.S. Lewis, about the shots, about the actors, about the characters. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, one thing that I learned from that trivia track was that C.S. Lewis dedicated the initial tale to his goddaughter. And another fun fact was there's a piece of his wardrobe at some museum in Chicago, and the sign above it says, "Enter at your own risk." And there's other stuff on the DVD.
There is. Too. We've barely scratched the surface of what there is. There's a featurette completely on the children's journey. We've got cinematic storytellers, which goes through 8 of the people involved in the film, from the production to the costumes to the special effects to the composing. Really good stuff on there. And you could tell, listening to, especially in the cinematic storytellers, how much they loved making this movie.
You know, Shane, I took 6 pages of notes on this film alone. I don't think I did that during a single day of history class in high school. There's a lot of stuff on that second disc, and I think it's equivalent to 2 discs on a Peter Jackson special edition. I think people are going to be freaked out and Narnia it out at the same time, but just it is well worth the investment. And I highly recommend this film, not only for the film itself, but for all the supplemental stuff. It's definitely in contention for one of my top 10 DVDs of 2006, and I think that's a compliment.
It's definitely a great DVD, and the feature that they have on C.S. Lewis from One Man's Mind, little short, but it was really nice to see how he grew up and where the whole idea for Narnia spawned and his influences.
Exactly. And I think kids that are the literary types are, you know, going to go out and get the rest of these books anyway, you know, despite, you know, the shortness of that segment. Because if you think about it, Shane, C.S. Lewis is all over this thing as far as the supplemental stuff. His name comes up again and again. So, you know, this is probably, well, it probably already has spurred the sales of the books, and the DVD will probably continue to keep that
well,
going.
Well, like I said, I picked up the books after seeing the movie. I wanted to know more. But another really interesting feature was the Explore Narnia 3D animated map, where you can choose a section of Narnia and you can visit it.
That was so cool. So cool.
It was really well done. The crew at Disney did a marvelous job on putting everything together on this DVD. And the chronological timeline, even, where they show the difference between what's happening in Narnia and what's happening in the real world in England in Legend of Time, is another little snippet that I really enjoyed. It's short, but it's really neat.
Yeah, we gotta find somebody here to invent that for us, you know?
Too true. Though one other thing that we haven't even touched on yet, Jeffrey, was the Creatures, Lands, and Legends, where you go in and you get to pick 11 of the characters in the film, the creating of the creatures, and you can watch them from the novel side, so their mythological influence, and then you can watch them by going through the wardrobe from the movie side and character side of things. What an interesting way to develop a special feature.
And the text is actually taken from those actual books, or the actual book, right?
Not really taken directly, but based off the novels. Not exactly written word for word.
Not my favorite feature on the disc, but just I found it fascinating, I'll put it that way.
Well, I didn't say it was my favorite. I just said it's a very well put together feature.
It is.
Highly recommended. That's all you can say. Pick up the 2-disc now. If you're listening to this and you don't have it, go out and get it. Spend the money. It is well worth it.
Or the white witch is going to get you. Yes, Peter Jackson's fabulous remake of the 1933 classic King Kong. And boy, what an update it is. The one thing that I loved about this movie, Shane, and we got to talk a little bit about the movie because it's a wonderful accomplishment both cinematically and technically, but the expansion of the storylines from the 1933 original just really made this something special, And the biggest thing, the biggest change, and I think the most effective one, is changing the relationship between Ann Darrow, played by Naomi Watts, and Kong. If you remember in the 1933 original, Fay Wray didn't want to have anything to do with this, you know, humongous, you know, gigantic orangutan ape. But in this film, the relationship is quite different.
Sure is. You really feel that development between the two characters. They get a lot more on-screen time together, and you can see, especially at one of the core scenes where Kong is fighting the T-Rex, and I know I'm not wrecking the movie because it was advertised all over the place, that particular scene, but where she backs towards Kong is really the key moment where the trust is developed.
Exactly. And the fact that when they filmed this, if you look at some of the production diaries that were on the net and also available on Disc Now, there was nothing really for Naomi Watts to relate to or react to, I guess I should say, except Andy Serkis in the costume and sometimes nothing at all. It's just a fabulous performance. And, you know, we were talking, you know, about Narnia a few minutes ago about how well the technical aspects were done. If anything, I think this is just as good or perhaps even better at times.
Well, you've got Weta again, who did all the work on this, and they did, again, a fantastic job of creating this 40-foot ape.
Right.
He looked realistic. He did not look fake. He didn't look out of place. Some of the dinosaurs looked a little out of place, but Kong was the only thing that really seemed to be spot on perfect, as if he was a real 40-foot ape.
Exactly. And
Andy Serkis is really becoming a motion capture genius. He did Gollum, as most of us know, and now he's done Kong. What's next for this guy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're working on a follow-up to Kong involving Lumpy's twin brother. For a lot of people that do not know, he also played Lumpy the cook in this movie and did so very, very well.
Yeah, I enjoyed his performance. He's a good actor.
And talk about performances. How about Jack Black? Huh? I mean, this guy, you know, he's not only funny, but he can act. He did a wonderful, wonderful job as Carl.
He sure did. The one thing I do love about Jack Black is his cuckoo eyes. I miss them in this movie, but it's a more serious movie, and he really showed a great level of sleaze and ambition.
And, you know, toward the beginning of the movie, he was a likable kind of scoundrel, but just as things progressed and his greed took over, his ambition took over, he really became really not so much of a nice guy after all.
Well, Jeffrey, one thing I really am impressed with is the video and audio quality on this DVD. The video itself, I give it reference quality rating.
I think it's the best sounding disc on our show this week, Shane. The nonstop 5.1 score is amazing, or track, I should say. It's very well done. One part that I think is, if you want to show 3-2-1, one sequence I think which is totally amazing is toward the end of the film where the planes are encircling Kong on the Empire State Building, going from, you know, rear to the front, back again, side sweeping, you know, whatever. Just brilliantly done, and it just sounds extremely realistic.
It sounds almost like you're on the tower itself, on the top of the Empire State Building with those planes circling around you. And we're not going to be shy here, folks. Kong itself, King Kong, 70-year-old movie being redone. If you haven't seen the original by now, we're not going to be afraid to wreck the ending for you.
Exactly. I mean, you know, if you haven't seen it, you know, sorry, you're lost. But
There's no statute of limitations on a 70-year-old movie.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's an American classic. I mean, you know, it's been AFI certified. You know, it's been one of the films registered for protection by, I can't think of the program right now. But, you know, the thing that I liked about this movie is that while it's very progressive in terms of how far we've come in terms of special effects and what have you in the last 70 plus years, it also doesn't forget to pay tribute to the people that made the first film. And just, you know, my heart was just like, when the end of the film comes on, but and you see the dedication to the original folks that inhabited Skull Island. You know, what a nice tip of the hat by Peter Jackson. What a gentleman.
Sure was. And he grew up a Kong fan, so you kind of expected it that he would pay that sort of tribute, and he really did stick pretty close to the original, just expanded on it.
Right. Now, bonus-wise, Some people are probably going to be a little disappointed by disc number two. I know you were. We talked about this the other night by phone. And it's basically the production diaries, the remaining production diaries that didn't make the package that Universal released around Christmas time. These are the
The post-production diaries.
Exactly, the post-production diaries, which for somebody like me that didn't have time to go to Khan is King and didn't want any of the magic to be affected before I saw the film itself, I think it's a wonderful addition. It's wonderful to just see how much work went into creating the special effects and the reshoots and all that, and even being a part of the premiere. I thought it was vastly entertaining, and I enjoyed it.
Oh, I did enjoy them.
Yeah.
I did enjoy them. It's just that, you know, I don't believe that we should have to pay a little bit of extra money for something that we could have went and downloaded for free.
Well, true, true.
You know, that's the only qualm I have, but it is nice to have them on DVD. It's nice to have them right there with your King Kong set.
And, you know, there's no commentary. There's no deleted scenes. So you know what they're setting us up for.
Yeah, and it has been said that Universal is going to be coming out with a 4-disc set sometime, perhaps later this year is the rumor.
Probably just in time, probably to celebrate the first anniversary of the film's release. So I'm looking forward to that. So Universal, don't forget us around that time of the year, please. No, I'm going to cut that out. anyway.
Let's talk New York, 1933, Kong's New York.
That has got to be one of the best documentaries on a DVD that I've had the pleasure to sit through ever. I mean, it just gives you a insight into that period of our history during the Great Depression and how those elements influenced the original Kong and also the remake. As a matter of fact, the Depression plays even more of a role in Peter Jackson's vision than it did in the 1933 original.
It sure did. And the one thing that blew my mind, when Kong is up on top of the Empire State Building and they do the shot of New York and they show it all in the background, we all know there's tall buildings there now, but they really developed an amazing computer-generated New York that looked so real.
Very lifelike.
I believed I was looking at a 1933 New York City.
And, you know, it's quite an accomplishment because, you know, there's only so much that they can do when they film in New York for a period movie, say like Gangs of New York or what have you. But the way that they did this and just, you know, it was all enveloping, you know, it's just from front to back. It was just very well done. And yet another well-deserved Oscar for the creative team of Kong.
I agree. They did deserve every Oscar that they earned for this film. One last extra, Jeffrey. You know what it is. Mm-hmm. A little hokey, a little fun.
Yes, we're talking about Skull Island.
A natural history.
And, of course, anybody who knows about this film and its back history knows that Skull Island does not exist. There's no film that got trashed or burned or, you know, lost to history or what have you.
And Skull Island didn't sink.
Yeah. Very important. Very important. But
because it never existed.
Exactly. It never existed. But I'm going to tell you, it wouldn't surprise me at all if some people were so drawn in by this and didn't know the actual background that they called the travel agent and just got, hey, have you got any brochures for Skull Island? We'd like to see this place, you know. I could just see that happening. I really can, you know. And just, you know, if any travel agent listening to this show has had such an experience, we want you to give us a comment on the website, okay? Because we got to talk about it. We won't mention any names, but we got to talk about it because I know there's at least one person. One person had to have called about this. I know. I just know.
Now, even though this isn't going to be the final set, I am going to recommend it, Jeffrey, and I'm pretty sure you're going to do the same.
It's a nice appetizer, I'll put it that way. The film is marvelous. You know, for some reason, I just couldn't get into it when I saw it theatrically. I guess I was just, you know, holding my expectations too high, and while I liked it, you know, I didn't love it. But upon looking at it again a second time, oh, wonderful job, Peter Jackson. King Kong, 2-disc edition. Like I said, great appetizer. Buy it now.
The one thing we should probably mention, though, Jeffrey, is there is a single disc version available. In Canada, it's actually a two disc edition, the single disc, because they had to put the French track on a second disc, being a 3-hour movie.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, that was the first disc I received, was the single disc, and it had both on there. But I just want to throw that out there for folks to know, especially for our Canadian listeners.
Exactly. And for those of you listening for the first time, Shane and I are in different parts of the world. I am in the U.S. and you are in Canada.
Woot, woot. All right. That wraps up Kong.
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 Kong. We're just going to do this and annoy the crap out of you. Kong. No. Okay. Anyway, Shane, speaking of big apes, well, more down-to-earth apes, that leads us to our next review, which is the Planet of the Apes collection, or the Legacy collection, I should say.
The Legacy collection, to cash in on more money that the studio does not need.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Let's just put it that way. All these DVDs have been out before. It's pretty much the same stuff that you've been able to pick up for the last couple of years, just repackaged. You know, it's a little disappointing, but at the same time, I didn't have them, so it's a nice set for me to finally get my hands on. But come on, it's pretty much the exact same, the first movie, the exact same disc that was released initially 2 years ago as the anniversary collection. There's no really extra bonus material. The sixth disc, which is a documentary, already released.
Exactly. I feel this is just a totally unnecessary package because I don't know if the differences, I don't know if the exact same contents appear on both the Canadian and American versions of this particular box set, but from what I have been able to gather, some stuff has been excised, and I think that's just a damn shame because if anything, everything that has been released on all five of the movies, including the documentary, should have been presented here. But just it's just another way of a home video department. And we don't mean to criticize. You know, this is just our opinions. You know, your mileage may vary, but it just seems like an unnecessary excuse to put out these movies again when you know the 40th anniversary is coming up and I can see another package right now in my crystal ball and the sticker is going to say, with never-before-seen material. I mean, you know it's coming, you know. So just, I highly recommend folks, I don't know if it's out of print now, but Fox did put out a very nice two-disc version of the original film that had the behind the Planet of the Apes documentary, some screen test with Edward G. Robinson, who was originally slated to be a part of this film, and other things like that. And those particular elements are not on this set, but you know, if you want to get more bang for your buck, I suggest that you hunt up the original five movies the way they were packaged about 2 to 3 years ago. A better bargain for your money, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there, and you know, we might as well just end this review now because I think we're done lambasting Planet of the Apes.
I think you're right, Shane.
Yeah, and now we've got a nice little...
That concludes the soapbox moment of the show.
Now, Jeffrey, let's talk about a couple of exciting things we have going on the website itself.
That's
right. We have a new blog. If you go to the dm.icravedvd.com, you can add a /blog, or you can click on the link on the right-hand side that says blog, and it will take you to our blog where Jeffrey will explain what he's been doing over there.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of reviews, and I'm hoping to contribute at least a review a day. There's a lot of stuff that I've had to play catch-up on due to some family situations that I've had to be a part of over the last month and a half, and we've got reviews of a great Billy Bob Thornton, John Cusack movie called The Ice Harvest, underrated little independent film called How to Lose Your Lover, and just today I posted a review of a special edition of Elvis Presley's first film, Love Me Tender. And we would welcome your comments on these written reviews. The blog is going to be a location where we can write written reviews for films that we don't have time for on the show. DVD musings, maybe some news tidbits or something like that.
Yeah, and we'll let you know on what's going on with the show. Sometimes we're going to obviously have to delay it. We can't always stick to the perfect schedule as much as we'd like to. Like for this week, we had so much material to look at. We had to delay the podcast. We had no choice. because 2 weeks was not enough to go through essentially 9 movies plus all their extras. It was just too much.
But I had a swinging time.
Another ape reference.
We've also got, now this is exciting, we have got our very first contest giveaway to talk about.
Sure do. And this is a doozer. And it is specifically for King Kong. Jeffrey got some stuff from the good folks over at Universal. We got a single disc edition. What else do we got there, Jeffrey?
We have a King Kong hat, black hat with the navy blue, I guess you could say, King Kong logo, and a King Kong t-shirt that has the King Kong logo on it as well. All this swag in one beautiful package coming right to your front door if you can answer the following trivia question, and then Shane's going to tell you how you can enter to win all three of these goodies. Okay, here's the trivia question. What popular film scorer had his score rejected for Peter Jackson's remake of the 2005 Kong in favor of, help me out here, Shane, I think it's James Newton Howard composed the score for. Right. So whose score got rejected? If you think you know, Shane, what do they have to do?
Head to dm.icravedvd.com, click on the contest button at the top of the page, and in there you will find a link to the King Kong contest with the rules and directions to enter the contest. And if you don't have the right answer to the trivia contest, your name is not going to go into the big hat that we have when we draw all the names for the winner of this DVD.
Mm-hmm. Right, and we will announce the winner on our next show.
We will announce the winner on the next show, on the website, everywhere we can. We'll let everybody know who won this package.
And, of course, our next show will be in 2009. But remember to get those entries in very quick as you can.
Because the contest is going to close in about a week after this podcast is done.
Exactly. Okay, what else have we got to shamelessly plug here?
We are now listed on iTunes. For those of you who have iTunes, have iPods, have anything, MP3 players that can download from iTunes, you can find us in the music store now. We are listed in the podcast section. You can get us there by searching for DVD Reviews or the DVD Marquee. And also, we are on Podcast Alley, and we would really super appreciate if you guys came to the site and voted for us to help us make it into the top 10, possibly number 1.
Yeah, that's our goal. We would love to have your votes.
Just head to the website, and on the right-hand side of the page, you will see Vote for Us and a Podcast Alley button. Just click on it, and once you get to the site, there's a Vote for Us, or Vote Now, sorry, button that you can click on, and it will give you the directions on what you need to do to vote for our show.
Exactly, and we look forward to hearing from you, and we would appreciate your support.
That's right.
Okay, now, I think that's enough plugging for one show, and right now, we're going to talk about our next film, which is Memoirs of a Geisha.
You cannot call yourself a true geisha until you can stop a man in his tracks with a single look.
No one can do that.
Choose someone for me.
The gray hat. Choose someone for me, Onesa.
The boy on the bike. There's one look.
Based on the wildly popular novel by Arthur Golden, it tells the story of Chayo, a young Japanese girl who's suddenly taken away with her sister to be sold to a geisha house, and she winds up being treated more like Cinderella by both the house's owners and the egotistical head geisha known as Hatsumomo. But just like the fairy godmother in the classic fairy tale, Chayo gets her very own real-life equivalent of a fairy godmother who has faith that she can turn the young serving girl into a perfect geisha in due time. In synopsis. Now, Shane, the first hour of this film was very good to me, even though it moved slowly. But sometimes, you know, you like films that develop characters and the story that take their time and really make it worth your while. But after the first hour, it just turned into like a Japanese or a Chinese soap opera. I mean, it was just, you know, I was just bored to tears. I mean, there were some great moments here and there. The winter dance, oh, beautifully filmed, but would you expect anything less from the guy that directed just Chicago, you know, Rob Marshall? But I just think that it just left me unfulfilled. For some reason, it just didn't work for me, and I just can't recommend it. Your thoughts,
beautiful
sir?
Film, first of all. Beautiful cinematography, beautiful look, everything about this movie.
Oh, no
beautiful.
Doubt, no doubt. I mean, it's a beautiful film. I mean, just a cinematography won an Oscar, if I'm not mistaken.
But I actually enjoyed this movie, and I know I made a comment about your little post about snoozing on the blog page saying that I liked this movie, but I did.
Yeah, right.
And it might be because I am fascinated by the Japanese culture. It really was a fascinating movie for me, even though it's fictional.
You know, exactly. True. Another thing that probably a lot of people would find surprising, and matter of fact, I think Arthur Gordon points that out in one of the supplemental sections. Speaking of which, this is probably the weirdest reaction I've ever had to a double disc set. I wind up not caring for the movie, but the bonus disc, I loved it. It was fantastic. There's so much material on there. And, you know, like you, I'm interested in the Japanese culture. Just because I didn't like the film doesn't mean that this kind of stuff doesn't fascinate me. And, you know, there's so many things to talk about. I don't know if we've got time to talk about them all, because I think we're running into overtime here. But what was your favorite moment
that
on disc two?
That is actually a pretty tough question, because there is a couple that I really enjoyed. Yeah, the Geisha Boot Camp, I really enjoyed that. Probably the other one was Sayuri's journey from book to screen. When I first saw this movie, I was not aware that it was from a book. I thought it was based on a true story. And even in one of the features, I know they mentioned that people still come up asking, Sayuri's still alive? Or stuff like that. And the director's like, no, she never existed.
Yeah, for me, I was fascinated more by the building of the set, because, you know, that part of the world has gotten so modernized that it would really be hard to recreate the time period, you know, that's represented in this movie from, like, say, the late 20s to about the early 50s, something like that. And they had to construct this entire, basically an entire little town. And the way they built it and used special effects, CGI and what have you, was just nothing short of amazing. Yet another great technical
sure
movie
is.
On this
and
show.
Another thing that I found fascinating was the fact that John Williams, now they've got a complete feature on John Williams, chased after this movie for the first time in his career. He chased after a movie to score. And we're talking about probably the greatest film composer of our time.
Right, right. I mean, that's almost like Pope John Paul asking Bono if he could have his sunglasses. And you know what? That's a real story, and it actually happened. So, and it's a beautiful score, which leads us to the video and technical aspects of this disc. I thought they were pretty much flawless.
I'm going to agree, especially if this movie is so beautiful, and then it gets this marvelous transfer from, and this is such a okay. beautiful movie, and it gets this marvelous transfer from WB, it just caps off how beautiful this film is. Really wonderful video. I have no complaints about it whatsoever.
So what'd you think about the audio?
The audio I loved. I absolutely loved the audio on this DVD. The directional effects were probably the best I've ever heard on any soundtrack or any Dolby Digital 5.1 track yet. A couple of times I thought there were people in the room. I was turning around, looking constantly, and I'm by myself in the room, and I really thought, especially when they're in the crowds and in the streets, that there were people behind me.
Well, I think it's a pretty good mix, I'll put it that way. Not the best that I've ever heard, but I will tell you that John Williams' score sounds simply exquisite on it, and, you know, I wish that it were isolated, but of course, you know, they want you to buy the soundtrack album. That's not going to happen, but I will say this. I was so impressed with all the supplemental features, and I wish we had time to discuss them all, but they were so good that it's actually made me consider looking at the main feature again, and maybe perhaps on our blog or something like that, I'll say I was wrong. So
I'll hold you to that, Jeffrey.
Okay. All right. Okay. Like Curly, make a note. heard of it. Anyway, but for me, it's just I'm going to have to say a moderate thumbs down, as Ebert would say. But just I did like the performances. It's got a great cast. I'm a big Michelle Yeoh fan, and
Ji Zhang was amazing.
Yeah, she is too. I mean, and doesn't she sound so cute the way she talks in the supplemental features? Yeah. I mean, she sounds like she's about 15 years old. I mean, she'd have a very hard time ordering a pizza in this country, I'll put it that way.
And I was impressed with Ken Watanabe's performance as the chairman.
Other than the Batman movie, this is only the second time I've had a chance to see him in a movie. I didn't see The Last Samurai, and I know I should, but he's a pretty doggone good actor.
He was really good in The Last Samurai.
So I say semi-nay.
And I say,
Shane says,
pick it up. I say buy it. Or even rent it. Rent it first if you're not too sure.
And, of course, for fans of the film, you know, it's heavily loaded with goodies, so if you loved it, you're going to want it. But for those of you who are a little unsure, give it a rental.
So to sum it up, Jeffrey says yes on the supplementals, no on the movie, and I say yes on it all.
We're turning in this. This is turning to like ice skating voting at the Olympics. This is too much. Let's just go to the next movie, Shane.
One of the goriest flicks I've seen in a long time, written, directed by the one and the only Eli Roth, is Hostel. And he's coming off a pretty good flick with his last one. I haven't actually seen it, but I've heard good things, is Cabin Fever.
I believe that particular movie wound up being, at the time, Lionsgate's biggest-selling DVD in history, and it's actually created a big cult following for that film, which evidently helped him get this one green-lighted.
Yeah, he had a lot of help. Quentin Tarantino's name is also on the cover, Quentin Tarantino Presents, but this is a really interesting idea for a movie. A couple of backpackers off in Europe basically end up trapped in a murder-for-profit business.
And I just love the way that it took its time. You know, you didn't really know what direction this was going in, and just, you know, these guys are just having the time of their lives, you know, with all these, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, easy women.
Hookers.
You know, and then all of a sudden they're... but easy like Sunday morning. But they're just, you know, things just take 180-degree turns toward the dark when things start to look like a combination of Silence of the Lambs and, I don't know, maybe the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. All I can say is that I thought this was the creepiest movie that I have seen since maybe Candyman, which really creeped me out, and 8mm, that Nicolas Cage movie from about 3 years back. I mean, but you know, we also talked about this off air. You had a different reaction to it. You thought it was kind of tongue-in-cheek and quite funny.
Well, I wouldn't really say tongue-in-cheek, but I was cheering on the gore. Let's put it that way. It wasn't really laughable, but I was cheering on the gore. I was like, yeah, more. It was really exciting.
Yeah, more severed heads.
More severed heads. Use that drill again. The effects that were done for this movie, like the makeup and stuff like that, really well done. Howard Berger from the K&B Effects Group is the one who did it.
I think Howard owes us some royalties for this particular show, Shane.
Yeah, because if you've been paying attention, Howard was also in Narnia for the special effect, who was recommended by Weta, who was also in Kong and Narnia. So there's your connection there.
Very talented guy, much in demand. He's probably never going to have to worry about money in his life.
Not after the few movies he's done now. Now, if you're watching really closely in this movie, there's two cameos I got to point out. There's one with Eli Roth, and I believe one of the producers, I think it was Chris Briggs, right at the beginning when they're smoking the bong. And then there is the Japanese horror director master Takashi Miike. You know, he's in the movie for like 5 seconds. He's got a really brief line, but for those who know what he's done in the past, Ichi the Killer, you'll probably pick him out. Now, let's talk extra features here, Jeffrey. Four commentaries. Four.
Overkill or useful?
Personally, I think overkill.
Ghost appear and fade away. But you know, sorry, I just know 100 billion songs. I thought that they were all very good. And my particular favorite was the one where Eli went solo. And it's a good track for people who are interested in getting into film and the process that a young filmmaker goes through when he's suddenly like, you know, the toast of the town, you know, with Cabin Fever, just getting that cult following and an even bigger audience on DVD. And what he had to go through, you know, thinking about trying to become a producer and then changing his mind and then doing this particular film. It's very well done. It's very well done.
I'm not saying they're bad commentaries. You know, I just think it's overkill to have four on here.
Well, you know, Cabin Fever, let me tell you this, Cabin Fever had five.
Did it? See, that I'd never got it, so I wasn't aware. But my favorite commentary is the one with Quentin Tarantino, Boaz Yakin, and Scott Spiegel. It was funny. These group of guys are more talking about their passion for films and what they went through to end up at this point, and focused a lot less on technical details, as I found was the case through most of the commentaries.
It was like hanging out with your buddies on poker night. It's that kind of a track. It's not all laughs. They do discuss some, you know, things seriously, but it's a very fun track and probably the most entertaining of the four. But there are two others, including one with the incredible editor, George Foseley Jr.
Yeah, he covers the first 33 minutes of this one with the actors and George Foseley Jr.
And then following that, we've got everybody's favorite red-headed webmaster, the one and only Harry Knowles.
One thing that I kind of found interesting was that Knowles actually kind of pointed Eli Roth in the direction for this movie, and he mentioned so in, I think, pretty much every commentary that he was pointed to a website while they were talking about Cabin Fever before it really actually finished being made, because production was put on hold. But I'm not a fan of Harry Knowles.
The last commentary track, let's talk about, oh, we forgot to mention that there's one of the beautiful actresses in the film is also on this particular track with Foley and Knowles, and that is, help me out here.
That's Barbara Nedeljkova.
Oh, yes.
She is amazingly beautiful.
And she has an amazing voice.
She does. It was
I would welcome her to call me with that amazing voice at any time of any day. But
yeah, and we can't forget to mention Eyþór Guðjónsson, the Icelandic man who played the crazy sex-crazed guy in this movie, who's quite a funny character.
Yeah, and what about the taxi driver with half of his teeth missing, and he was drunk when they actually started shooting?
They couldn't let him drive because he was so drunk. That was funny. That's in one of the three featurettes that they show that. That was brilliant.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's a really well-done single disc with a lot of material on it. So fans of this movie, you know, we highly recommend you pick it up. It's not out yet. This is an early review, and we want to thank Sony for providing us with an advanced copy. It comes out Tuesday, April the 18th, so check it out. Hostel. Good stuff.
All right, now before we wrap today, we just want to remind you to vote for us on Podcast Alley, visit the blog, download us on iTunes, and don't forget to enter the contest.
That's right. Once again, we are giving a King Kong prize package consisting of the single disc of the film, a King Kong hat, baseball cap, I should say, and a t-shirt. And I think I need to throw in that the shirt is a medium. And like we said, we'll draw for the winner on our next program.
Until next time.
And one more thing, can't forget before we go here, special thanks to Ron Epstein and all the fine folks at thehometheaterforum.com, and of course, your wonderful site, Shane, iCraveDVD.com. Thank you very much for your help.
Always a pleasure, my good man.
So until next time,
keep listening, baby. Yeah.
But what of the things that we've shared? What of all the sweet words that you spoke in private?
Oh, well, that's just what we call pillow talk, baby. That's all.